is the Game Misconduct Podcast with Don LaGreca.
And welcome to the Monday edition of Game Misconduct. I'm Don LaGreca. Things back to normal. The season's underway. And Monday's a tradition like no other when we welcome in E.J. Raddick from NHL Now on the NHL Network. How are you, sir?
Like no other.
Like no other.
No other, yeah. Well, it's good to know.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I am good. Tough weekend for my Jersey Shore Whalers U15 team. A couple of losses, but the kids are trying. So
that's all right.
You can hope for.
It's all about sportsmanship.
We'll get back at it this week.
Becoming a team. Learning to lose. You can't win until you learn to lose, right?
Yeah, well, it's like for 15-year-olds, I mean, it's about development. To me, that's really what it's all about. I mean, obviously, you'd like to be winning because that's always a little more fun. But we've had some wins and we've had some losses. And, we're trying to just – the kids are trying to learn and to develop and have fun and that whole process. So I can only tell you this. I'm really happy and excited to be part of it. And I really like a lot of my colleagues over there with the Jersey Shore Whalers over in Howell and all the kids and everything because they come and they're trying. And that's all you could ask.
Cool. And now we turn our attention
to the
big boys. Absolutely. I mean, we're early into the season. Wednesday will be exactly 1 week, but everybody's played multiple games here with the exception of the Blackhawks and Flyers. But, we get a little bit to sink our teeth into. Anything that, jumps to mind at you here early? Any trends, anything to worry about or get excited about over these first few days?
When I think about being worried, I'm thinking about the San Jose Sharks.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing.
Because the first game they played without Carlson and Evander Kane. The second game they played without Evander Kane. The third game they played without Evander Kane. Now he'll be back after a 3-game suspension. But I look at their group, and they look really thin. I mean, yes, they still have some high-end players, but they lost Joe Pavelski with 40 goals gone and a leader in that room. And they're asking some young players to come in there and take bigger roles, and that's going to take some time. And their play in their defensive zone has not been great. Mark Edward Vlasic, who's really their defensive stalwart on defense. I mean, they have Carlson and they have Burns, but those guys are known more for their up ice game and their puck moving skills. And Vlasic has had a struggle in his own end. And the guy that I feel particularly bad for right now, and I'm really hoping that things are going to turn around. It's so early, so there's plenty of time. But Kevin LeBanc, who signed that contract, the team friendly deal, 1-year contract, betting on himself, could have signed a bigger deal coming off a good season last year, and it's been a struggle. No points, -5 in the first 3 games, and just watching some of the play, it's been a struggle. And he is being put in a different situation this year, and I just worry for a young guy like that they start to press and start to push and impact their game, because this guy didn't forget how to play. I mean, he's a good player. He's a really good offensive player, and, I'm hoping that Kevin gets his act together, and he's a local guy here in the New York area from Staten Island, and just a real good guy, and hoping things get going for him. But the Sharks right now, I know it's 3 games, but I'd be worried.
And a little eye-popping for me, and I think you too as well. We both were kind of high on Dallas. They're off to an 0-3 start.
Yeah, they are, and it's not, absolutely not the start that they were looking for. And, they ended up getting the 3 goals in the Detroit game yesterday, but giving up 4. And, not what this kind of starts, not what you're hoping for. And this league is so tight right now.
Yeah.
I mean, let's face it, the season doesn't end because you lose a couple early, but it's tight. And all these points at the end of the day are meaningful. And, Jim Montgomery is a really good coach. They got they're integrating some new players down there with Pavelski, with, Sekera and a few other guys. So, I'm thinking they're going to find their way. But, right now, through the first couple, Tyler Seguin just a 1 goal in 3 games. Jamie Benn no points in 3 games. So those guys need to get going. And because I watched the Stars game against the Bruins on their first game, and Brett Ritchie scored. The former Star scores on his first shot for the Bruins. And when you're not scoring and providing offense, you don't have a lot of wiggle room for your goaltenders. So you know, we'll see how Dallas progresses over the next several, but not the start certainly that they were hoping for.
You know, and watching Winnipeg live, I got to call the game on Thursday, and they had that big comeback against the Devils, but you can't forget how, you know, they were down 4-0 latter stages of the second period to salvage that game, and then, you know, kind of a dud last night against the Islanders. And I was talking to Kevin Cheveldayoff, a good friend of ours, the show. Of course, we elected him the best assistant general manager. Now he's the general manager in Winnipeg. And doesn't seem like we're...
Hey, listen, that award has led to big things.
That has. It certainly has. And for him, but, you know, we were talking about the blue line, and he said he knew a couple of those guys were going to go. The Bufflin thing has been baffling for everyone. He has no idea how this is going to resolve itself, but, you know, he's not there. And, you know, I look at this Winnipeg team and I say Stanley Cup caliber forwards, right? I mean, that is a crop of tremendous offensive players. When you can have a Patrick Laine not on your top line, you know you can score. But that's going to be a problem. That blue line's going to be a problem, and I'm not sure I can put them, you know, among the elite teams to really be overly surprised by their start, considering how much offense they're going to have to try to produce to get points every night.
Yeah, it's going to be tough. I mean, they got Ville Heinola, who is Heinola, I guess you would know how to pronounce it better. You called their game.
Heinola.
Heinola. He's an 18-year-old kid, so he's playing 20 minutes, so that's tough. I mean, you think about their blue line now, all of a sudden it consists of Heinola, Kulikov, Pionk, Morrissey, Boteto, and Dahlstrom. I mean, you know, that's a far cry from Trouba and...
And Bufflin.
And Bufflin and Myers.
Chabot.
You know, I mean, they had, a much deeper group there. And now Josh Morrissey, you know, he's averaging through these first couple of games, he's averaging 26 minutes. I mean, that's a lot of ice time. Is he going to be stretched too thin? So that's definitely going to be a big challenge. And from what I'm hearing about Dustin Bufflin is that he is not coming back.
Yeah.
I mean, now, I don't know. I mean, that could change. But the word that I've been hearing from different people around the league is that he has just decided that, he does not have the passion for it at this time. So, again, maybe that will change. But, for now, he is basically not playing and not part of it. And, they got to move forward without him. So it's a challenge for Kevin Cheveldayoff, for Paul Maurice. This is going to be an uphill battle when your defense has been that decimated through various transactions over the last couple of months.
And we go to the good. Your good starts for Edmonton, Anaheim. I'm looking at the teams that were non-playoff teams last year getting off to those good starts. You know, we saw it with Vancouver and Ottawa last year, and it didn't sustain because, let's face it, an 82-game schedule, the cream is going to flow to the top. But good starts for those two teams in the Pacific.
Yeah, and, Anaheim, it's interesting. I mean, they are moving in some younger players, but they have a good core of defensemen still, and they have a great goalie, John Gibson. So, I mean, that makes a difference. And, we're seeing more youth and speed up front with this group. And Dallas Eakins is the head coach there. I mean, Dallas was the head coach in Edmonton, and I don't think he was quite ready for that opportunity. He had that experience. He went and has coached in San Diego with the Ducks minor league team for the last couple of years. I think he's more ready now. To be a head coach, he's familiar with a lot of these young guys that they've brought in, the Sam Steeles and, the Max Joneses and those type of players. So, you think about it on defense. They still have Hampus Lindholm. They still have Cam Fowler. They still have, a player like Josh Manson. I mean, they've got some good defenders.
Yeah.
So I'll be curious to see how the Ducks play this year, but they are going to probably be, they've got a lot of reason to come out of the gate playing well, and they've done it so far.
And you look at the East, and some of these games have just been absolutely tremendous. I was up in Ottawa where the Rangers beat the Senators. We'll get to the Rangers in a moment. I know a lot of our listeners are really excited about their start. But that game ended just in time for Hockey Night in Canada to flip over to the end of the Leaf-Canadians game. So I got to see overtime and, Tavares cherry-picking coming out of the box and getting saved by Price with the glove save, Domi hitting the post, and just an incredible thing. But, you look at three shorthanded goals in the third period. I mean, you turn on a Leaf game, you're going to get entertained. Now, the coaches are going to pull their hair out for sure, But you see some of these games. You see what happened in Detroit with Mantha getting four goals and the start that Mika Zibanejad's off to. I mean, I don't know if you've got the stat. I'm sure you do, getting ready for your show today. first player since Jaromir Jagr in 1995 to have 8 points in the first two games of the season. That's Mika Zibanejad's start. He's got points in 8 of the Rangers' 10 goals. You know, so we're seeing great individual performances, but we're just seeing some wild games. Devils blowing the 4-goal lead. I mean, is this just early jitters, or is this a sign that this is going to be, you know, just the constant progression of this becoming more and more of an offensive league?
Well, I think we're going to see more offense. I mean, goals were up last year, and they've been up over the last couple of years. So I think we're going to see more of that. I think, again, being at rinks and seeing young kids playing at all different levels, just to see the skill level of, you know, of the game, of the kids in general now, I mean, it's way up. The kids now all grow up facing, you know, the butterfly goaltenders who, you know, it's obvious. When you get an opportunity, when you get any time and space, you don't have to think. You just have to put it under the bar. If you can do that, you can score goals in this league. And you get, you know, you add in traffic to the net. You add in the analytics we see, which, you know, it drives home the point about trying to move the puck across the slot. The royal road, as my buddy Steve Valiquette would like to say. And, you know, I think you're gonna see more of that. So, and you know, the goaltender's equipment's a little bit smaller around the edges, which helps. And the rules have been changed to help offense. I mean, we've seen this little tweak about being able to, after an icing and on the start of a penalty, to put the faceoff in the circle in the offensive zone you want. And I could tell you, there's two cases already, and there's probably several more that have resulted in goals. I mean, in Montreal on Saturday night, the Canadiens were able to do that, and Deneau was able to win a draw back against Tavares in the left wing circle on his strong side, and led to a goal. And also in Detroit yesterday, the fourth Mantha goal, which ended up being the game winner, was a similar circumstance where the Red Wings were able to put the faceoff in a circle to play to their strength. And so, there's a lot of things that are coming together for it, but. You know, I don't think we're going to go back to the 80s, Donnie.
You
had crazy games, but I think we're going to see a continued uptick in offense.
Yeah, I think, and it's just the philosophy, too. I remember when 3-on-3 came in, it became a puck possession game, right? So
Yep. You
bring it up the ice, you don't have an angle, you know, recoil back in your own end, start over again. You see that 5-on-5 at times. You know, where it's just, I've got the puck. I'm not going to go dump and chase it. I'm going to wait until I can get an angle, or we'll wait and change players and just try to get the right personnel on. I mean, it's just winning the faceoff has become to me more important than it's ever been, because boy, you could do just so much with the puck and guys aren't giving it up. Remember, we grew up and just dump it in, go chase it. That was the decade of the 90s, basically, you know, and just, not anymore. Now it's just, I'm going to possess the puck, I'm going to hold it, I'm going to go coast to coast, and if I don't like my angle, we'll start again. We'll try over again.
Well, that's certainly the case in the 3-on-3, which is still a joy to watch.
Yeah, absolutely.
3-on-3 hockey is so entertaining. That Devils Winnipeg 3-on-3 was crazy the other night. And yeah, Jack Hughes out there and Taylor Hall and all those high-end guys at the Winnipeg Jets offensively. When you think of Wheeler and Scheifele and Connor.
That's a good line. Right? That Scheifele, yeah. Wheeler line with Ehlers is as good a line as there's been this year so far.
Yeah. That's a talented trio. There's no question about that. But when you get, you know, it's interesting. They have a little more depth with their forward group, but it's interesting to watch teams this year that have like that one strong line. You know, do you break guys up? You move them around? I think what we're seeing with Dave Tippett at Edmonton is a great example. Obviously, McDavid and Draisaitl like to play together, and they've had a great deal of success together. But I think what Tip is doing is pretty smart, is that, you know, he's starting them out apart, and then as the game unfolds, there's situations, obviously, in power plays, but late in periods or certain offensive situations, he gets them out there. And I think that's probably the right way to handle it in that particular circumstance, because, you know, if they're always on together, I mean, all the other team has to do, and it's not necessarily an easy task, but is to check that line into the ground, and then, you know, you're hopefully going to, you know, make hay against those other three lines. Mm. So I like it when teams, you know, try to separate guys a little bit and try to have some balance in their lineup. And then in those moments, when you get opportunities, then you can get them out there together, and you hope you can take advantage of those opportunities.
All right, let's get to some tweets. A lot of people want to talk about everything around the National Hockey League, so let's jump right into it. Tim McHale, sticking on the Rangers, says, I know it's only two games this season, but I cannot believe in those two games the Rangers have scored 10 goals. Their identity of defense first and always playing physical is kind of out the window. It's a shooting gallery on the ice now.
Well, I mean, let's face it now. They've played the Winnipeg Jets. We just talked about how their defense is decimated.
Yes.
And they've played the Ottawa Senators, who are, you know, maybe going to be the worst team in the league this year. So, you know, there's a little reason to kind of to use the Larry David to curb your enthusiasm a little bit. But that said, I mean, Mika Zibanejad has got 8 points and 4 goals, and that line with Zibanejad, I believe he's playing with Panarin and Buchnevich, has been real nice together. So, you know, that's great news for the Rangers. It's great to get off to the start. You got to win those games. I mean, I'm sure the Devils are looking at it and saying, boy, you know, we blew a game to Buffalo, to Winnipeg, and then we went up and got our doors blown off by Buffalo. I mean, they're looking to regroup now after 2 games. So I'm sure for the Rangers, it's thrilling to get those couple of wins. And they have the crazy schedule, as you well know, where they play, I believe, 1 game in 11 days. So there's going to come a time that they're going to pay for that schedule, and it's going to be more difficult. But, you know, they've got to be – they're probably wishing they could get back out there and be playing now with the start they're off to. But, you know, I guess they have – I think it's Edmonton next Saturday.
That's right.
It for 10 or 11 days. So we will see, you know, how things go when they face a little bit of tougher competition. But it's a great start. It's a great start for the Rangers. And
it is.
What's your thoughts on Kapo so far?
He's been good. I think he can handle himself out there. Obviously, I think he's trying to, you know, do things and realizing he's getting resistance that he probably never had before in his life. But you can see there's quality there. I think he's got good vision on the ice. It's just that what he's seeing here is that when he has the puck, there's going to be somebody immediately in his face. He doesn't have near the space that I think he even had in Traverse City or even in the preseason. But you could see he's got good senses. The coaches seem to really like what he's about. I mean, he's right now on a line where Kreider really isn't doing a lot, and Ryan Strome. I don't know how long that combination will last. Remember, 8 of the Rangers' 10 points have come from their top line. It was mainly Zibanejad, but with Buchnevich and Panarin. But I like watching him. He's fun, but no points so far. He's had a couple of opportunities, nothing glorious at all. But the coaches seem to be pretty happy with what they've seen so far.
It'll come, I think, for him. It'll be interesting to watch. Plus, you know, him and Jack Hughes with the Devils, it'll be interesting to watch both of them. They'll have some growing pains, but they'll also do some things that will really, you know, bring fans out of their seats, and it'll be fun. So that's going to be – I'm looking forward to that first meeting, which I think is coming up somewhere in October here.
Yeah, that's going to be coming up Thursday, next Thursday. The Rangers next don't play Thursday. Again until Saturday, and then the following Thursday will be their first meeting at The Rock. That game is going to actually be on NBC Sportsnet, so a little national television. And it kind of builds up for the Rangers from there, because then the next night they'll be in D.C., to take on the Capitals. So
you know what, Donnie, I got to say, like, going back in the day when we would do our show every day, like, that was something that, you know, they would never get right in the league, right? Like Kapo and Hughes' first game, and it wouldn't be on national TV, you know? And, like, this case, they're in, you know, the New York, New Jersey area, so it's a big media market. We would see it anyway. But it's good that they have it on national broadcast to get to see. I mean, when you're – it's like anything. You're selling, you know, these high-end players, and this is part of your league and your game. You want to sell it. You want people all over the – you know, all over North America to be able to see these guys. And, you know, the good news now is the world has changed, so things are more accessible to everyone. But still – it's nice that when they're planning a schedule like that, they're thinking about
because, you know, it's more of a team sport than the NBA, but it's that philosophy of, hey, you got two really good stars drafted 1 and 2 playing each other early in the season. It's a natural rival to begin with. So, yeah, put it on TV. We saw it with McDavid, too. Usually they shied away from putting Canadian teams, especially the Oilers, on national television. Yeah. But when McDavid was good, why not put him on, especially when he was playing Matthews? Remember, you get those rare Canadian, you know, Toronto-Edmonton matchups on NBC Sportsnet that they would never touch with a 10-foot pole 10, 15 years ago that I think you can really sell those players. Sticking to the New York area, Ricky says, I'm looking forward to a great Islander season with the addition of Hiller as the play-by-play, a power play coach and a goalie upgrade. They can win the Metro. They are 1 point out last year. Your thoughts?
Well, you know, this whole thing about the power play coach and everything, they did a very odd thing last year. They broke up their power play instruction into two different areas. Now, I know Scott Gomez worked with the power play once they were in the zone, and then they had another coach that worked with the power play entries. And I know some Islander fans, you know, gave some grief to Scott about the Islanders' power play last year, but the reality is their entries were not very good. They were among the bottom five in power play entries, and that was not Scott Gomez's purview with the power play. So, I mean, we'll see how things go this year. Every year is different. I think it's cyclical. They have the ability. I think they have the players to have a successful power play. I mean, when you think you have Big Anders Lee around the front of the net, you have Matt Barzal as a creative guy. You know, Brock Nelson is a good offensive player. I like Devin Tay's skating ability. You got guys that can shoot it on the back end with a couple of those defensemen with Ryan Pulock for sure. Josh Bailey is a good offensive player. I mean, I think they have the wherewithal to have a successful power play. But, you know, I think you have to see it on the ice. And again, I don't know necessarily if that was, something you could blame, on coaching. I think at the end of the day, for whatever reason, they did it that way last year. It didn't work out. They're trying something different this year, so we'll see how it plays out.
Yeah, we'll see. And as far as the goaltending is concerned, I like Varlamov, but how much better can the goaltending have been from last year, right? I mean, allowing like 1.6 goals a game, it seemed like.
I don't think it could be any better.
No, it can't
really
be.
Don't.
Whether it's the goaltender, the defensive structure, whatever you give it credit for, the idea over a long regular season, the Islanders' problem was not giving up goals, it was scoring them. And then the playoffs may be a different story, but, you know, the point is that is an upgrade to me. I know you kind of disagreed because Varlamov's been hurt in his career, but really, how much better can it be from last year?
It's a bigger picture. Like, the whole thing that went on with the Islanders and the goaltending was a bigger picture. I think they see Varlamov as someone that, they signed him to a couple-year deal. He's been a good goalie when he's been healthy. He's never played in front of a really structured defensive group, so I'll be curious to see. You would think naturally that would benefit him, but some guys play better when it's a scramble. And I've seen that in over the history of this game. I mean, I always mentioned Curtis Joseph. He was a great bad team goalie. So we'll see how Varlamov handles those circumstances, this season. But he's obviously a pretty talented goaltender. And I think, again, it's the eye towards Ilya Sorokin, who's over in Russia, that is represented by the same agent who represents Varlamov. And, I think it was a bigger picture, and I think Robin Leonard ended up being kind of collateral damage for the Islanders, and he goes to Chicago. We'll see how it goes for him there. But Varlamov is certainly a capable goaltender, and Thomas Greiss played well in his first outing against Winnipeg, and he's someone that played very well last year. So I'd imagine it would be much the same idea of those guys maybe in near split.
Tom says, how long until we can say Buffalo is for real?
More than two games.
Well, especially he even mentions in the tweet they did have a 10-game winning streak last year, too. So,
exactly.
It is still a little too early.
Man, let's go after the All-Star break and see where they're at that point. I mean, but you know what? Rob Kruger, the negative is he's been out of the NHL for 6 years, right? He's been out of it 6, 7, 8 years, whatever it's been. He's been in soccer over in Europe and Great Britain, and he had a short tenure with the Edmonton Oilers as head coach. I've always been a Ralph Kruger fan, but that's a big thing to be away from the National Hockey League for a long time. That said, he's a quality person. It seems like that he's connecting with the key personnel there. They haven't done anything, run out and done anything crazy yet and trade Rasmus for Stalinen, for something less that they should get back. So, we'll see. Carter Hutton's been good in the first two games, but, that's going to be the thing. Is Linus Ullmark and Carter Hutton going to be able to play well? Is the defensive zone coverage going to be good enough as the year goes on? And then, where are the younger players as they're, moving up? Rasmus Dahlin has gotten off to a terrific start. He already has 4 points. He had a hell of a goal in their opener against the Pittsburgh Penguins. So, we'll see where the Sabres are at. They've got those two great building blocks in Dahlin and Eichel to start their franchise with. And, like I said, I like Rob Kruger as a person and as a mentor for these guys, and we'll see. But they're in a tough division, and it's a tough league right now. So getting 4 points in those first two games is a nice thing. We'll see if they can build on it.
Miami Tank Fins says, "Hey Don and EJ, I know it's early and foolish to draw any conclusions in October, but have you ever seen a start to the season that the Devils have experienced this season? It is indeed too early to panic over the goaltending. I'll hang up and listen."
Yeah, I think it's too early. I mean, remember last year? I believe the Devils started off 4-0.
Yeah,
and if you recall how it worked out at the end, it didn't mean much. They had a lot of problems, and and they ended up struggling and falling down the standing. So I know they played well in the first half of the game against Winnipeg. I think they made a few, they got a little careless and opened the door for the Jets. And then Schneider ends up getting the cramping issue, has to leave the game. And, you know, it slips away. They get a point, second of a back-to-back the next night, home opener in Buffalo, tough spot. And, you know, the Sabres are just, you know, they're on, as we just talked about, they're kind of on in focus or in gear or on gear right now. So Devils have a couple days off. They got a back-to-back coming up, Philadelphia on Wednesday, and then Edmonton at home on Thursday, and that won't be easy either. So, you know, we'll see how it goes, and hopefully Corey Schneider will be back in net, as it didn't appear. It looked worse when he left.
Yeah.
I thought, boy, this isn't going to be good, but apparently it was really more of a cramping issue. And, you know, the funny thing or the odd thing is that Corey has had those kind of issues going all the way back to his time in Vancouver. So hopefully, you know, that's going to be remedied, and he can come back in and continue on his path of trying to kind of regain his stature as a goaltender in this league.
Just thoughts on the Malkin injury, and Bukestad also out a while for the Pittsburgh Penguins.
Yeah, that's a big one. I mean, to be out long-term, as they're saying, it looks like a couple of months. And, you know, in the past, when Malkin or Crosby has been out, the other guy has stepped up. But, you know, and I think Sidney Crosby will still do all the things that he does. I mean, he's Sidney Crosby, and I don't think that's really changed all that much at this point. But, you know, they're going to have to ask, like, a Jared McCann is going to slide probably into that second center spot. You know, they're going to have Galchenyuk be, you know, going and providing offense for them. So it's a kind of a little bit of a different roster. But that's two big pieces that, you know, particularly Malkin, obviously. And then Bukestad is someone that, you know, they like him, and he's a big body player, and they feel he's going to be part of things for them. So so Mike Sullivan has got some challenges there right off the bat, and challenges that they'll have to deal with over the next several weeks or maybe months.
All right, a couple of games tonight, Blues, Maple Leafs. That should be fun at 7 o'clock. Also at 7 o'clock,
oh,
the Sabres.
Measuring stick game, the Leafs.
And the Columbus Blue Jackets. And what I did for my ice pick to get your thoughts,
okay, what do you got?
And I was able to find it at over under 5.5 for both games.
Okay.
So I parlayed and have the over for the Leafs Blues, under for Sabres Blue Jackets.
You know what? I like your thinking. As soon as you said over under and you said that, I said, up. I got to think that the Leafs are the one that has a chance to be over, and the Sabres Blue Jackets has a chance to be under. So I'm with you. We'll see. Yeah. You know, we'll watch tonight and see if we're right.
I nailed the parlay last week.
See if you're right.
Last week I was able to parlay, and it hit the over-under for Maple Leafs and Senators, which was 6.5. That was a pretty hefty over-under.
I remember you talked about it, and I like that one.
I like the over. And
Senators
are
going to give up goals.
And I had the money line, Capitals beating the Blues.
There you go. So you're cashing in.
That's it.
You are cashing in. You're gold.
But more importantly, so are our listeners. That's the main thing. That's the most important.
They deserve to be independently wealthy as well.
That's right.
So you are there for them, as you always are.
All right, so NHL Now, 4 o'clock Eastern time, Monday through Friday.
4-6. Scotty Hartnell on with us
a couple
of days this week. So he's fun. Mike Johnston. So it'll be a good week.
Did you ever, you've worked with Scotty before, right?
I have not. Like, I don't even know if I've been on a show with him yet, so I can't say and we certainly have not done NHL Now together, but really, you know, a good guy, and you would remember this story, I think. Now, maybe
I was going to bring it up to you. I think this is the same story.
Yeah, when I ran down the street and got him, we saw him walking down the street. It was like June or something. It was
right.
So weird, and we were in the NHL store, and we could always look out the window and daydream as we're doing the show, as I often did, as you know.
Right.
So when I would look at you and say, huh? But we looked out, and I saw, you know, Scotty has that distinctive look, or had it at that time. He's cut his hair. He's got shorter hair now, but he had the distinctive kind of long red lock. And I saw him, and I said, let me go run him down. And I left the studio, as I often did during the show, and just took a walk and ran out and grabbed him. And he was nice enough to come back and come in and sit in with us for like 15 minutes.
That was great. I give you credit.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's probably my biggest – and I mentioned it to him again today, and he laughed, and he said, yeah, he got security after that incident. And, you know, he no longer travels in New York alone.
That's right.
But it was awesome, and he's a good guy.
He's a very good guy.
So he's going to tell some stories today, so it'll be fun on our show between 4 and 6.
Because even if there wasn't like any kind of connection, whenever, especially recently when he was in Columbus, Rangers, it seemed like I was always in Columbus doing the Rangers Blue Jackets game. I'd interview him for the pregame because I just knew he was a talker. So even though there was no tie with the Rangers or whatever, if I wanted to get a good 3-minute interview for the pregame, he was always my go-to guy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He's you know, and he's a good guy, too. I've enjoyed being around him, and I'm looking forward to he's going to be working with us on Monday and Tuesday on the show, and I probably throughout the year, he'll probably bounce in from time to time, but really a fun guy and has had a lot of experiences in this league, so it'll be good for the viewers to kind of take advantage of some of that experience that he can share.
All right, buddy. Enjoy the week. We'll talk to you next week.
All right. You got it, my friend.
And catch EJ Raddick Monday through Friday, 4 o'clock Eastern time on the NHL Network. As I mentioned, games tonight, both at 7 o'clock. But I'll be back with you on Wednesday. We're going to kind of recap things a little bit then. We've got a full slate of games on Tuesday to kind of get into. So we'll be back with the podcast on Wednesday. If you want to get back in touch with me, the best way to do that is through Twitter, at Don LaGreca, hashtag Game Misconduct. Thanks again to EJ Raddick. Back with you again on Wednesday. This was the Monday edition of Game Misconduct.
Thanks for listening to the Game Misconduct Podcast. Looking for more Don LaGreca? Hear him on the Michael K. Show weekdays from 3 to 7 p.m. on 98.7 ESPN in New York and worldwide on the ESPN app. And don't forget to subscribe to the Game Misconduct Podcast wherever you get your podcasts.